You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
There'll be
ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, 16 and a half years on the radio as your host of this program, I don't know if I've ever enjoyed a month as much as I have enjoyed this month. And this show tonight, when you're featuring guests like Philip DeWinter, who you just heard in the first hour, and now Nick Griffin, what a wonderful series, our march around the world. We have been around the Western world this month. Australia, Canada, Croatia, England, Scotland, and elsewhere. Jim Dowson last week talking with thought leaders and elected officials across the Western world. It's a privilege to be able to bring these guests to you. And not only these guests, but the music from some of these respective nations. That was the White Cliffs of Dover by Vera Lynn, who was the Force's sweetheart, a pop anthem in World War II in the UK. Nick Griffin back with us now, the former member of European Parliament, of course, the longtime leader of the British National Party. Nick, always great to talk to you, and thank you. You are our closer in what has been just a magnificent month of broadcast radio. Thank you for staying up late to close out this very special series.
Well, James, I'm very honored, and thank you for having me on.
When we talk about leaders of Europe, this wasn't something I was going to make mention of with you, because we have so many questions and so many topics. A lot of listeners have sent in questions for you, but I compare and contrast the leadership that Europe has versus that which we have here in America. You have people like you in Europe who have served in high office, member of European Parliament. You have people like our mutual friend, Philip DeWinter. You have people like Viktor Orban and the other people that Philip made mention of.
You have
in the
people
first
that are actually spokesmen for the historic people of your various nations. And we don't have that in America.
And we didn't even have that even with Donald Trump, as much as we might have liked Trump for different reasons. He never made mention of the fact that he was standing up for the historic majority of America. But in Europe, you have that, and you have that, and you have that in high elected office still to this day. What gives? What's the difference? How are you so far advanced than us here in America?
To be honest with you, I don't know. Certainly in the in Europe proper, mainly in Europe, they have the advantage of electoral systems, which make it much, much easier for insurgent third and fourth and fifth parties to break through to a degree. So you could say that America didn't have that. That's the point. But we didn't have that sort of easy system in Britain either. Our system is very, very much more like the American system. And really, it's a two-party state, and the two parties are really so similar, it's a sort of one-party state. But we did manage to break through to a degree here. So that excuse won't wash for America. So I simply don't know.
Let me say this.
10 years ago, I would have said, look, Americans, pull your socks up. You know, get on with it. Now I'd say, don't worry about it. There's no electoral road to sorting this mess out anyway, as we discussed in the past. But do get on and do something effective.
Well, let me say this for the Anglosphere, Nick. This is Keith. Basically, the people of England are the people of America, the founding stock of America by a vast majority. And the people of the Anglosphere, that's Canada, America, New Zealand, Australia, Rhodesia, South Africa, they proved their the quality of that stock of people. Basically, if you get them out of that pernicious class system that they had in England for so long, and they may still have it, but and yep. give them a reasonably fertile patch of land, they'll turn it into a garden spot. In fact, you know, the fact that there are white parts of the world outside of Europe is basically due to English settlers.
Yep, certainly so. There's another, perhaps the factor here is precisely about the kind of people who went. Because the kind of people who went to America in particular were, of course, highly motivated by religion rather than politics. It was the religious feeling that they weren't able to worship that led most of them to leave rather than a political issue. And also, of course, the ones who went were, I think, particularly individualistic. So in America in particular, you've got a founding stock and tradition which is very religious more than political, and is perhaps so much more individualistic even than the English that it makes it very difficult to organize collectively, which, of course, is what you've got to do if you're going to fight politics.
All right. That being said, we have so much to get to with you this hour, yeah. Nick. Our final guest of our March Around the World, which now dates back 4 weeks, and it has just been such a privilege and a pleasure to speak with such upstanding men across the Western world, and we wanted Nick to be the closer, and for good reason. This is a question that comes in from an expat who is living in the UK currently, and he writes this: most of those who voted for Brexit did so to regain border control and implicitly to keep Britain white, but ironically, Brexit will close the border to white immigration from Europe while creating a flood of non-whites from the Commonwealth. Do you agree with that assessment, Nick, and can or will that be reversed?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with it, yep. And in fact, Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, is now saying that now that we haven't got so many people coming in from particularly Poland and other parts of Eastern Europe, that we need immigration, and he's just offered every single Chinese in Hong Kong the right to come and live permanently in Britain if they want to, as part of this crazy clash they're building up with China. So, yeah, we're going to see a lot more non-white immigration. That was always on the cards with this. And, yeah, your question out there, he's absolutely right to spot it. It's ironic that people voted for Brexit overwhelmingly because they feel that, you know, we're losing our country, it's changing so much, and particularly because of mass non-white immigration. And what they've got as a result, in fact, is even more non-white immigration.
Well, Nick, this is Keith again. What is it with Boris Johnson? I thought he was supposed to be England's version of Donald Trump or England's version of Viktor Orban or something.
Yeah, well,
he's turned absolutely to be the polar opposite of what at least people in America were expecting when we heard reports on Boris Johnson.
Well, that's right, Nick. In fact, Keith made mention of the reputation that he gets in the media to a previous guest earlier this month from the UK, and he was quickly refuted with regard to that. Well, my goodness, are we already through one segment? Okay,
well, listen, we got three more.
Push, yeah, but it goes by every time with Nick Griffin. You need 3 hours. 1 hour is never enough, and already the music is playing. That caught me by surprise, even after all these years. That seemed to sneak up on me. We'll come back with the question about Boris Johnson and the reputation versus the reality. Nick Griffin, former member of European Parliament, our closer, next.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
I'd have to say, if you asked me what I've enjoyed more, presenting you the different leaders and elected officials from the various European nations this month, or the music that represents those nations, I would tell you the truth. I would tell you it's the men, but not by too much. Because, listen, our people, what a wonderful expression of humanity our people have given the world in terms of architecture, music, invention, creation, exploration. The Western man is unmatched. And folks, we and all
among
know
the Western men, quite frankly, unmatched are the English.
Well, and that's Nick Griffin, and that's why we wanted him to be our closer, a man who has stood up for us in the very pinnacle of power, European member of European Parliament. That's Percy Grainger, though, by the way. Country Gardens, that's an old English folk tune. Nick, we were talking before the break about Boris Johnson. So Boris Johnson has this reputation as a maverick, as this Donald Trump-esque type guy.
Guy doesn't even bother to comb his hair.
Nobody believes that, though, in our circles in the UK, though, do they?
No, absolutely not. Of course, the clue really is the media reputation, because that means that's the reputation that's been given to him by people who are very much on the far left. So draw the parallel. In America, you know, CNN and so on, presenting Donald Trump as literally Hitler. You know, this simply isn't the case. Facts about Boris Johnson, very briefly. Primarily, he's an opportunist. He wrote two speeches as to whether he was going to go for Brexit or against it. And he decided in the end to go against it because it was good for Boris Johnson, because he wanted to be Prime Minister. He's a classical liberal. He's not a Tory. He's a classical liberal, always has been. He comes from an extraordinarily upper-class background, and Keith mentioned the old problem of class divisions in Britain. They're still there, and these people look down with contempt on the rest of us. His regime is completely in the pockets of the corporate elite, and he personally is particularly proud of his Turkish, Muslim, and Jewish heritage. So he simply doesn't really identify with us anyway.
Well, you know, it's like we were talking about Meghan Markle a couple of weeks ago. It says, for the historic English nation, that they have a black American princess before they have a Cockney princess. They just can't can't kick mud in your face enough, can they?
Exactly.
That whole thing, I mean, I don't even want to revisit that because we've done that already, but the whole Oprah thing, Prince Harry, let's just keep moving. Well,
I think she was put in there like a time bomb to blow up the English monarchy.
I like the stiff upper lip English persona, and so hopefully they can withstand this. But back to Boris Johnson, his cabinet. You mentioned the Hong Kong. So his supposedly conservative government has invited 5 million Hong Kong Chinese to immigrate to the UK. Two-part question, Nick. How many do you think will accept the offer, and how can the government justify this mass movement of people at the time of a supposed pandemic and unprecedented financial crisis?
Well, I suppose they hope to deal with that by the idea that the pandemic will be over by then, or all these Chinese will be vaccinated as they arrive. How can they justify it? They don't need to justify it. They just need to force it on people. The political system is now so neatly tied up that they can do pretty much what they want. The whole COVID pandemic farce masks and lockdown has habituated the vast majority of people to obeying what the government says and to feeling helpless. So I think if they come, they'll be, they will come. As to how many it'll be, I don't really know. It could be a few thousand. It could be a huge number. Johnson wants millions. There is a sort of justification for it. I'm not justifying it. I don't support it. I'd oppose it with every fiber of my body. There is a sort of logic to it, given that the population of Britain is about to start falling off a cliff because of the demographics, as we talked about in past shows. Won't go into it again now. But our population's about to crash, and that means falling property prices. It means a permanent economic recession, such as the Japanese have had for the same reason for basically the last 20 years. So if you're a big capitalist who puts money before nation, race, tradition, all the things that really count, then you need mass immigration. If we're going to have it from anywhere, I'd rather have it from Hong Kong than from Africa. But I'd rather.
Well, let me just say this for you, if I could.
Amen to that.
Well, let me give you the rejoinder to that. That's what we had in America. We'd always heard that the Asians were the ideal immigrants. But you see now in America how they're mobilizing Asians against the historic white population of America. You know, they tell you, even though you're being beaten up by black thugs all the time, they're really doing it because of white racism, and so you can run, but you can't hide.
Well, this is the thing, Nick. What Keith is referring to is the situation where you had this young white man who was a member of the Southern Baptist Church, a Christian denomination here in the United States, and he targeted, because of his addiction to pornography and to sex, he targeted sex workers at different massage parlors in Atlanta, and they were predominantly Asian females. Well, he went and he gunned down a few of them.
Six of them were Asian, one white, one Hispanic.
All right, and so he did that, and then, of course, and we mentioned this with Philip DeWinter in the previous hour, and the media instantly clued in on the fact that he was a white male and a Christian, and that was the sole reason for this atrocity, where just a week later, I mean, you couldn't have planned this any more ironically. A week later, you had in Colorado, in Boulder, Colorado, a Syrian immigrant, Islamicist, a Muslim, and he gunned down and killed 10 white people. But the fact that he was a Muslim and the fact that he was a Syrian immigrant, it had nothing to do with it. It was all because of gun control.
Narrative,
we won't even re-mention.
We need to mention this for Nick's benefit. We used to run a media narrative chart where it said if you had a white shooter and a non-white victim, the media narrative was racism or the Confederate flag. If it was a non-white shooter and white victims, it was gun control. And if it was a non-white shooter and a non-white victim, can the story run a story about the Kardashians instead?
That's right. They can always pivot and make the narrative about make it advantageous to their interests. But this was two mass shootings and mass killings within 2 weeks in America, And the narrative couldn't have been more stark, and that's what we've got.
And it followed that chart to a T.
Yeah. Your comment, yeah, your commentary on that, Nick, if you would.
Coming back for a minute to the question of immigration into Britain and from Hong Kong, the particularly, if it happens large scale, the worst result of it will be that with the immigration from which we had en masse from Africa in recent years, that's, when it comes to miscegenation, that's reduced the problem of white women with black men en masse. But white men don't tend to go for black women, so you bring in large numbers of Chinese, and all of a sudden, there's white men have now got someone to outbreed with. So the people who want to breed us out of existence, it is actually a very smart move from them to move on and to start
one-two punch
Asians, real Asians. Quite shocking, and I think it will happen. The only question is, it might not happen that much because I think that Hong Kong is an extraordinarily wealthy place. I think the Chinese are happy there. Despite all the propaganda, they'll make money there. Why would they want to come to a derelict backwater such as Britain? So hopefully there won't be too many of them. But the risk is there.
Well, do you think they'll reinvigorate the English economy?
No. Well, listen, that's actually the parenthetical departure that we took with this whole Asian hate thing and forcing Asians. The media pitting Asians against the indigenous populations of Europe. It always seems to benefit their narrative, but there has not been an ancestral animosity between white Europe and Asia, but they can create one if it benefits their aims. We've got a lot more to go with Nick Griffin, a half hour remaining. Stay tuned.
Proclaiming liberty across the land, you're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The U.S. set another new daily high for COVID vaccinations on Saturday as new cases are seeing a slight increase. More than 3.4 million doses of vaccine were administered on Saturday, with an average of 2.6 million shots being administered daily. The nation did record a seven-day average of just over 61,000 new COVID cases. That's up 12% from the week before. And a massive container ship blocking the Suez Canal has been partially cleared from its banks, but it's still not clear when the ship will finally be able to be moved. Crews were able to move the Ever Given's rudder and stern, but were unable to free the ship from the sandy clay of the canal. The nearly quarter-mile-long container ship has been stuck in the canal since Tuesday when strong winds pushed it into the bank. Canal authorities say that more than 300 other ships are waiting for the Ever Given to be cleared so they can traverse the canal. This is USA Radio News.
Billy Gerard here for Ocean Salmon. The new year is on its way and you're making those resolutions. One of yours this year to eat better. And you know what? Salmon should be a part of that. And the best salmon is available delivered to you from our friends at OceanSalmon.com. Chilean farm raised, sustainably raised in the cold Chilean waters. You know, it's one thing to make a commitment to eat better. The next step in that is knowing where your salmon comes from. The very best salmon comes from Chile. And that is OceanSalmon.com. Go right now. OceanSalmon.com. Use promo code ROCKSTAR15. You will get an additional pound of salmon, 15% off, and free shipping. Ocean Salmon. OceanSalmon. OceanSalmon.com. Promo code ROCKSTAR15. Free shipping. An additional pound. Oh, my goodness. And 15% off. OceanSalmon.com. OceanSalmon.com. That's OceanSalmon.com. Promo code ROCKSTAR15. Hurry. Supplies are limited.
A former Trump administration official has some criticism for President Biden's approach to illegal immigration. Mike Fortier reports from the USA Radio News Florida Bureau.
Chad Wolf was acting Homeland Security Secretary under President Trump. Wolf on Fox News Friday sharing his assessment of what the Biden administration calls a challenging situation on the border.
It is a crisis that is extremely impacting the men and women of the Border Patrol and the department.
He calls the decision to roll back some Trump policies the worst the DHS and Customs and Border Patrol has faced in their 18-year history. He also says President Biden is sending the wrong message to human smugglers.
What they are seeing today, really from January 20th on, is that All of the individuals that they smuggle across that border remain here in the U.S. and are released one way or another. Very few, mostly single adults, are returned back to Mexico. And so they know that, and they're advertising that.
Wolf adds border and immigration enforcement has been turned on its head. From the USA Radio News Florida Bureau, I'm Mike Fortier.
And this is USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
We're back now with Nick Griffin, a wonderful champion of his respective nation, an esteemed guest, to be sure, former member of European Parliament. Obviously made a name for himself with the British National Party, along with Philip DeWinter. I can't think, Keith Alexander, of a better way that we could have wrapped up our March Around the World series this month. It has been a fantastic month, but an especially fantastic night of radio with these two esteemed guests.
Well, Nick Griffin was one of the first people to sound the alarm in Europe, and he has stood the test of time. He's still in there, and he's still swinging.
Well, we had the opportunity to meet with Philip. When was that? Just 2 or 3 years ago, he came down to Memphis to meet with us, and we took him on a tour of Memphis. It's been much longer than that when I was last in the presence of Nick Griffin, and we were together at a joint.
Well, the welcome mat is always out, Nick.
No, that's right. Well, we're looking forward to the time when Nick is back here on, whether he's here or we're there, we can get back together. But, Nick, again, I want to thank you on behalf of the audience.
A quick anecdote.
Yes, go.
A quick anecdote involving me and Philip DeWinter.
Go, take it.
Yeah, yeah. So, obviously, Philip wasn't in the parliament, but I met him quite often. Met him 1 week, and he said, well, would you like to come up to my house for dinner next when you're over next in the European Parliament? So I duly said yes. And then quite often I would fly over, but since his getting to his house involved a drive, I said to a friend of mine, would you like to take me over and so on, and we'll have a drive? And he had a very fine car, a Nissan Skyline. Don't know if you know about the Nissan Skyline. It was old-fashioned, it was a real souped-up sports car, fantastic thing. All the young kids still look at these things, and they're wild for cars, I'm not. So, but the thing about the Nissan Skyline, it's a very low-slung car. And a couple of miles out from home on the way over to Brussels, we came around a corner, there was a lorry coming the other way, so my friend driving couldn't get out of the way, and in the middle of the road there was a dead badger. Now, the British badger is a bit bigger than your American badger, and this was particularly big because it had been dead several days. It was swollen up. So he hit the thing full on with this low-slung car, and this damn badger exploded underneath the car. So he sort of thought nothing of it, really. It didn't do much good to his foot, to his fender up the front, but we thought nothing of it. We got on the Channel Tunnel, got out of the car, and the stink was disgusting. Absolutely vile. So anyway, we got into the European Parliament, and the European every MEP has a right to park in the MEP's car park. So you've got to be really special and important to get in that car park.
All right.
So we took this car into the car park, and the whole car park stank for the whole of the week of rotten badger. It was absolutely...
There goes splendid. The neighborhood when the English come in, right?
There goes the neighborhood. The Brits have come.
Hey, listen, that is one story I didn't count on hearing tonight, but exclusively, ladies and gentlemen, exclusively here on TPC... Will you hear that story? Listen, next time we do this, we got to get you and Philip on together. We'll just do a round table. That's the English.
Well, that aroma didn't attach to you and your friend, did it? But just the car,
no,
right?
No, they were inside the car, I'm sure. What a great story. Hey, we're taking you behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen, with two of the heroes of our people and of their respective nations, champions of their nations, Philip DeWinter and Nick Griffin tonight. But Nick, getting back to COVID, and we've touched on this with you, you have nearly become a program mainstay now. You appear quite regularly, but were you surprised with regard to COVID? Were you surprised with Britain's overwhelmingly docile acceptance of lockdown, surveillance, and denial of health care? even life-threatening conditions like cancer, all in the name of protecting the NHS?
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought that they'll get away with it for a few weeks, but I thought that, you know, after this will crack. I'm really shocked and dismayed that so many people have accepted it, and some people have actually basically enjoyed it. And it's very clear that when we get another lockdown, probably in the autumn, people will go along with it as well. When they're told you've got to queue up every 6 months for a vaccine, they'll go along with it. It's really, really shocking. I will say it isn't just the people. It's been done through enormous manipulation and the propaganda. I've never seen anything like it. Goebbels, Stalin, they'd have been absolutely stunned by the sheer professionalism and the relentless scale of the propaganda that's used. And we had some really big demonstrations, especially in the early days, against it. But, of course, they're completely silenced. They're completely ignored. Or occasionally, if there's some violence and so on, it's, you know, that's put up. If there's someone makes a particularly cranky speech, alleging that this is some totally insane conspiracy, instead of just the World Economic Forum and the global elite aiming to take or destroy the middle classes of the world and just take away all our liberties, yeah, that's not a conspiracy theory, that's fact. But when someone comes out with the crazy stuff, they occasionally put that out, and thereby people think, oh, if I oppose this, people will think I'm mad. But it's been a brilliant campaign, and it has confused and cowed people, and it is very depressing. I still hope that there'll come a time when people say, look, this now is absurd. Well, we're in a position that half the country has now been vaccinated. We still have to wear masks. We still can't go to the pub. And we're now literally, we're not under house arrest anymore. They're saying, oh, you're being released from your house. You better go to the pub very soon. But we're under a sort of national house arrest. We cannot travel abroad. So we're still having, every single day, there's hundreds of illegal migrants crossing across from France to Dover. And that's not just crossing with the British Navy and the British Coast Guard trying to stop them. That's with the Navy and Coast Guard acting effectively as ferries to bring them in. So that's going on. There's still thousands of people coming into our airports every day, but we are not allowed out of the country. And I do hope still that there'll come a point where something snapped.
Nick, to your point, I have to make mention of this. One of our listeners who was born in the New York area, who is an expat currently living in the UK, but because he is an American citizen, he can travel. But he made mention of the fact that he could travel throughout Europe if it's for an official cause like work. Other people in the UK cannot travel even for Easter. You can't even travel across country lines to visit your family. And that is astonishing to me. All three major parties, he writes, are pushing the COVID narrative, but there are senior members of even Boris Johnson's Conservative Party and the Labour Party mayors of major northern cities who say it is past time to open up. Is there any chance of a
cross-party? Is there any grassroots pushback like there is in American states like Texas and in the South, for example?
Any chance of a cross-party revolt, he writes.
There's no chance of a cross-party revolt. There's a small number of conservatives are making noises. It's partly tactical. They know that they can make noises because the Labour Party actually stands for even more lockdowns. I think Americans will be stunned as to how draconian the lockdown has been in Britain and in much of Europe, and it really is absolutely astounding and horrific. So now there's no chance of a party resistance to it. The only real resistance, physical resistance, has actually come from students. It's very interesting that people on the sort of reactionary right, when they see, we've seen students tearing down fences in Manchester. They put big fences up around their dormitories and wouldn't let them out at all. And the students, after a bit, just came out and tore them down. In Bristol at present, which is a very left-wing city in the southwest of England, they've had some nights of fairly significant rioting and fighting with the police. And the reactionary right say, oh, it's a left-wing rent-a-mob. And it's not, and you can tell this, because when it's a real left-wing rent-a-mob organised by the Socialist Workers' Party, funded by George Soros and such like, they turn out with everyone's got the same placard. You know, it's all very professional. And these crowds, there's no professional placards or banners at all. It's actually genuinely grassroots. And it's interesting, these kids, by education, are left-wing. But this isn't organizationally left-wing. These are just ordinary youngsters who are absolutely sick of the disgusting way that the police bully and harass ordinary people, the way that students particularly have come out of this very badly, the fact that they know that their future is being destroyed. And this is a genuine degree of grassroots resistance. But unfortunately, of course, then your lower middle class and artisan working class who should side with it see it, or left-wing students think left-wing students, and immediately tend to go against it. So it's going to take...
There's no uprising of the pubs. There's no uprising of the pub people or the people in the pubs against this lockdown.
There hasn't been. No, again, quite astounding. Partly because part of the problem, of course, is that most of the pubs, or a lot of the pubs, are actually owned by the big breweries, or even if they're not, the publican knows that if he puts a foot out of line, if he stays open, then the police will take his license away. So they're absolutely cowards, and the government gave them some money to accept it, so they've gone along with it too. So putting together a real opposition to this is going to be a very difficult process.
Let's hang on and come back. Hold on right there, my friend Nick Griffin, longtime friend. Liberty News Radio Network. Melancholy to say, bittersweet to say, this is our final segment coming up with Nick Griffin and our march around the world. We'll be right back.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The calm before the storm. By a friend of Medjugorje, the strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q, the calm before the storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Thank you.
I know what you're thinking, ladies and gentlemen. No one's graduating from high school tonight, but one of the things we have enjoyed most about this March Around the World series is featuring the different music from the respective nations that we have been featuring. And that is, of course, pomp and circumstance. You hear that at every high school graduation here in the United
States.
College
graduations, too.
And that's true, Keith. Generically, the term pomp and circumstance, though, describes the ceremony of grandeur, a very formal celebration. However, here in the United States, the term pomp and circumstance almost exclusively refers to graduation ceremonies from high school to university. But
that's as ubiquitous as Mendelssohn's wedding march in a wedding.
But that composition was arranged by the Englishman Sir Edward Elgar in 1904. There you learned something you didn't know.
I knew that before.
No, not you, Keith, but perhaps the audience at large. But
you're Sir pointing at me.
Well, just to accentuate my point. But listen, fantastic music across the Western world. It's been an honor to feature it. Back to Nick Griffin now. Nick, one more question from the audience, and then I want to talk about, I want to get down to the nitty-gritty with you, my friend. But this first, a question, has the effectiveness of the UK military been as badly compromised as that of America's by the inclusion and promotion of women, homosexuals, and transsexuals?
I don't think we've got too many transsexuals at present, you know. One's more than enough.
But you're working on that.
It certainly has been damaged, but not just by that, just by the general lowering of standards as well. But that's partly in order to let so that women can pass and so on. They've had to lower the fitness standards. But our army now, the official figure last year for men fit to fight was 42,000. So it doesn't really matter how they compromise it with their crazy PC stuff. It's so ridiculous. Hey, well,
they don't have any transgendered Coldstream guards, do they?
Well, you're not going to win the Battle of Dunkirk with 42,000.
Yeah, there may be one or two. There's certainly homosexual ones. And they've, of course, made a point of having various ethnic ones. They've also, because of the problems of recruiting, or they've taken advantage of the problems of recruiting white working class lads who increasingly realize this thing really isn't for them, they're now recruiting a lot of Fijians and people from various parts of the former Commonwealth. So it's an increasingly darker army. But as I say,
an old Gurkha army.
Neither here nor there. It's so small, it's a joke anyway.
It's an old Gurkha army.
Hold on. We got to get to this. Very quickly, Nick, we have a regular contributor, a member of our staff and team here, very beloved member of our team, Jack Ryan, who has sacrificed his entire allotted time this month for this special series, The March Around the World. He says he's a big fan of you, and he wants us to make mention of him. Well, no, actually, I told him we would make mention of him in this segment. He didn't ask for it. I volunteer that. Jack Ryan and his friend Cindy Lou, who are big fans of yours, Nick, and we want to give them their due credit. He's a beloved member of our team who has given up his time on the air this month to make room for all of our European and international guests. So a quick salute to Jack.
Indeed. Jack and Cindy as well, because when Jack's doing work for you, Cindy's left without Jack. So she puts up with it, so she's a good girl.
That's indeed the truth. Well, getting back to the point we were making just a moment ago, does England win the Battle of Dunkirk with the current army?
Well, given that if they have a war with Russia over Ukraine or the Baltic states or whatever, or with China over Taiwan, the pathetically small army we'll have will be so far away, there's absolutely no possibility of getting back when they get beaten in a Dunkirk situation. And it really is, it's a terrible joke. It's not just the army. It is, to show how shocking it is. In 2005, and it's worse now, it was the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Trafalgar against the French and the Spanish, for that matter, when Nelson defeated them. So the Royal Navy decided they'd reenact it. They didn't have enough ships to reenact it, so they had to borrow French ships to represent the British ships of the line at the Battle of Trafalgar. As I say, it got even worse.
What was Admiral Nelson's last words as he lay dying on the deck of the HMS Victorious at the Battle of Trafalgar? I'm giving you a history lesson now, Nick.
Well, why don't you answer it, Keith?
Well, do you know it, Nick?
I do indeed. There's Kiss Me Hardy, which is almost certainly Kiss Met Hardy, i.e. fate, and he's been shot.
And that sounds like the new Navy.
Thank God I've done my duty.
Yeah, well, and that harkens back, back, gentlemen, to Robert E. Lee, our great, perhaps, I consider him to be the greatest American. I will place Robert E. Lee above even that of George Washington. Do your duty.
I had heard that he said, thank God, sir, I've done my duty.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's all about duty, though, and that was
that
was the thing, though, with our ancestors, to do your duty. And victory and defeat and all things, no matter what you do, your duty.
That's an English stiff upper lip personified.
Well, and that's why we've spent so much time in the British Isles this month. I look back on the last 4 weeks of programming, and we spent a lot of time in Scotland, in England, in the UK or Great Britain, if you will. And quite rightly so, because, of course, that is where the majority of the founding stock of America came from. Perhaps next year we'll spend a little more time in Central America.
See, I have in my house, Nick, a picture, you know, the lithograph or something of the death of Nelson on the ship. So I'm, you know, my English heritage is out there, and, you know, I'm not hiding
it
from anyone.
Well, that's right, because if you don't remember, Nick, Keith's mother was a war bride of World War II. Keith's father was a member of the Armed Forces of America, and he went and found an English...
one of those infamous guys they said was overpaid, oversexed, and over here.
Well,
he found
and you know what my father told me? He told me that the... GI's reply was that the Tommies were underpaid, undersexed, and under Eisenhower.
Well, we won't get into all that, gentlemen, but in any event, his father found a bride in England during the war years of World War II, and because of that, we have Keith Alexander. So
they
were
married till death do you part.
And his mother's still alive now in her 90s. But in any event, Nick, listen, we have just 2 or 3 minutes remaining. You are our closing guest, and again, I say for good reason. Your standard, your championship of our people, of your respective nation. You've set an example for all of us to follow. But we had last week a gentleman who made his encore appearance on this program, Reverend Jim Dowson. We talked about the book Deus Vult, which has become the most popular incentive in 16 and a half years that we've ever offered on this program. Philip DeWinter, in the previous hour tonight, said there is a future Charles Martel. There is a future Jan Sobieski. We will turn this around. We don't have to lament the current state of affairs for our people and for our nations. We know that. Mm-hmm. We don't have to cite the statistics. Do you believe, as I do and as Philip does, that we will turn this around, our people will turn this around at some point?
Absolutely so. Absolutely. Not least because what's being done to us by the liberals, by the global elite, it's so destructive and it's so insane that just as communism... this, which is a rather similar thing, just as it in the end collapsed under the weight of its own folly, so the Great Reset and everything that goes with it and the whole liberal edifice will collapse under the weight of its own folly. It won't be nice. You know, the collapse of communism did immense damage to the Russian people and so on. It won't be, and it's going to be a lot worse than that. But at the other end of it, when ease and comfort, and when they manage to destroy capitalism, which is in some ways a good thing, in some ways a bad thing, but at least it works in a material sense, they're going to destroy it. And they're going to destroy all normality. At the end of it, nature and God will reassert themselves, and it'll come right. And of course our people will once again emerge victorious. We were made for these lands, and we in turn made these lands. And no one else belongs here. We will get them back. It's a 100-year project, but it's inevitable.
Well, that's what Solzhenitsyn said. You know, there are people that say, you know, well, it swung to the left, it'll swing back to the right. He said, well, that's what had happened in Russia, but it took 70 years.
Yeah, exactly so.
And it took hundreds of years in Spain, but they did come back.
And in the Balkans.
Our people will come back. I mean, they had enemies that we don't have now with regards to establishment media and social media and all of this, the critical race theory. I mean, there are obstacles that we have that they didn't have. But I know this. as long as there are men out there like Philip DeWinter and Nick Griffin and all of the people who have appeared on this program this month, and indeed throughout the last 16 and a half years, there's not been a wasted segment. There's not been a guest that we said, well, why did we have that guy on? No, they've all been champions and representatives of our people and the cause greater than ourselves. Nick, with the final 60 seconds, it's all yours, my friend. You close out this series, and what a series it's been. A closing word, take it any direction you'd want, a shout out to any of the organizations that you think people should be looking into.
Take your shot on goal.
Take the shot. All right, well, I hear you selling a lot of the books, Deus Vult, Reconquista of the West. It's in stock again, so take your opportunity to get it. But more important still, the second book in the trilogy, Deus Vult, The Great Reset Resistance, is back from the printers any day now, and I would say it's even better than the first one. It's focused, it really is a tremendously timely and important book, and I hope very much you'll sell it, and I know that your people will enjoy it.
Amen, my friend Nick. We can't have you on enough. We look forward already to the next time you'll be appearing. Keith Alexander and I will be covering stateside news in our third and final hour. Nick, thank you for wrapping up our series. Thank you for everything you do. Good.